If you've always wanted to support the show with your hard-earned cash, now's the time to pause, go to Patreon, and search out Effin' Rad. Join one of our tiers. You'll get ad-free episodes every week, one day early, plus more cool stuff. The Effin' Rad Snowboard Podcast is presented by Skyview Campers, Neversummer's innovative take on the tiny home. Designed and built in beautiful Colorado, check out skyviewcampers.com. Wired Snowboards builds quality snowboards by hand 10 minutes away from my house. Visit wiredsnowboards.com and order one today. Fixed bindings are easy to adjust, long-lasting, high-performance bindings built to have less impact on the environment. Check out fixedbindingco.com. Rip Curl Outerwear, strength, durability, and performance. Designed to search further in the snow, head to ripcurl.com and check out the Anti-Series jacket. I can't wait to rock this thing. New Greens, 100% organic, vibrant green juice. Buy yourself some at newgreens.com and use code EFFINRAD at checkout for 20% off. The Boardroom Snowboard Shop, best selection, best prices, Vancouver's premier snowboard shop. The Boardroom ships to anywhere in North America, so go to boardroomshop.com or visit their stores in Vancouver and North Van. Support also comes from Mount Seymour, Grouse Mountain, Cypress Mountain, the Pro Standard GoPro accessories, and our friends at 1910. You can use code EFFINRAD at checkout for 20% off at 1910.com. The Haven's a center for transformational learning located on beautiful Gabriola Island. Plan a visit at haven.ca and use code EFFINRAD at checkout to save 10% off their Come Alive program. Austin Sweeten is one of my favorite snowboarders. His energy exudes his next level excitement. His style is powerful. His pro career has spanned 15 years, encompassing street parts, epic park shots, mind-bending backcountry trick combos, and solid lines that he's putting down on a regular basis. Board Slide Worldwide is Austin's media outlet that he created with Sean Lucy to host a variety of projects they produce to share their love for riding boards and inspire you to have a good time. Austin and his wife Robin Van Gin are one of snowboarding's power couples, and he is seriously the nicest guy. I'm excited to bring you this last interview of season 9 of Effin' Rad with the one and only Austin Sweeten.
I started snowboarding. I started skateboarding. I was heavily involved with like thrashers, like tried to get my hands on a thrasher whenever I could. And then I knew about snowboarding because my parents skied.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until, like, I don't think I saw my first snowboard video until I went to summer camp or spring camp at Wendell's.
The when first I was, one. Wow. Like,
very young. I mean, yeah. I was probably 11 at that point.
But you'd been snowboarding for like 6 years already.
Mm-hmm.
Just in a bubble, just like with your parents.
Yeah. Just a Snoqualmie.
One of the images from the Airtime podcast that stuck in my head is your dad following you off the bigger jumps. This is later on, obviously.
Oh, but yeah.
But like, just the thought of like, because I'm a dad of kids too. Like, so I would, of course, just straight air behind my kids if they were like riding the big jumps. Like kind of just like in that sort of father-son competitive thing.
Yeah, I mean, my dad was a badass. He, we would ride, I know the photo you're talking about. And so we would ride kind of all the mountains around Seattle growing up. But Stevens had a park that was pretty sweet. And they have the waterfall jump. And I remember hitting it. And my dad was just like, oh, yeah, I'll just follow you off the jump. And then he'd always tell me about like how he did backflips and front flips when he was a kid on
really?
Skis.
Yeah. No way. That's and, incredible.
And then my mom's a ripping skier. And she loves moguls. So when I'd ski with my mom, it was like, oh, we're going to go rip some moguls. But I'd be on a snowboard.
It's amazing.
Which...
I just read an article by Doug Lundgren yesterday, and I was leafing through some old magazines that a listener sent me. Doug Lundgren writes an article basically dissing everybody that doesn't ride moguls.
Wow.
Like basically saying, oh yeah, you're going to go and sit with all the losers sitting in the half pipe, you know, come ride moguls when you're a real man. Like that's like the essence of the article. And I'm just reading it now, you know, 35 years later going, you know, imagine being the guy that bet on moguls.
Wow.
Like, yeah, moguls are going to be the thing.
Yeah. Moguls can be sick, but it's got to be slushy and deep so you can kind of transfer and then use them as a bank slalom.
Yeah. I mean, I've never been able to make it work ever. Yeah. You have to be really, really good.
Yeah. Honkers, though, in the spring.
Yeah.
At Baker.
Yeah.
Good moguls.
Yeah. Yeah, you're a mogul guy.
And then you just...
I could see your style works in moguls, right? Because you're frothing. You're just jumping off everything and riding really fast. You have to kind of forget about the fact that you're landing flat on moguls sometimes.
Like yeah.
Yeah. I just watched your... what's the... Crystal Palace? No. The...
Velvet Castle.
Velvet Castle.
Yeah.
And my body ached at the bottom of that. Like, I'm just watching going, this is impossible. As I was waiting for the border lineup, I'm like, it's impossible.
Yeah.
Like, listening to the things that you're saying too. I think I caught at the beginning of each run your map,
tree, two,
right?
Trees,
one tree, two trees.
Oh,
like, that's like,
yep.
One tree here, two trees there is what I'm, the story I'm telling myself.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm constantly trying to find markers.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, I mean, you could probably look at me at the top of a line or even the bank slalom, and I'm talking to myself like, all right, like fifth berm ride high, like
yeah,
cut the sixth berm and then let loose on the seventh or, yeah, take a right at the tree. Double stack pillow, go left, and then there's a diving board.
How dangerous is that Velvet Castle line of getting like sucked into something that would just air to flat or like take you somewhere no good?
That run was pretty complex, to say the least.
Yeah.
It actually, well, from the peak, it went through kind of three stages of snow, which then ended in the valley bottom, which was a humongous terrain trap, with the south aspect on the other side. That being said, the Selkirk Tangers, they're like, all right, you guys can ride this, but we're sending five guides. Like, we're going to have three at the top, one in the bird, one at the Barbie angle.
Wow.
And we're not going on slope.
Oh, wow.
And
how rare is that? That's super rare, right?
That is like Travis working his magic and the operation being like willing to work with Travis and his vision. And obviously he's built such an amazing, trustful reputation to do these things.
Yep.
So there's a lot of moving parts. And then, but with that being said, the top part was very steep, kind of runnily.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went into a little bit of a pillow face. Then the line that I rode, I had to cross the Abbey chute, and then it was the kind of the pillow field at the bottom.
Yeah.
But my first run, there was two fingers, and I'm going in, and I was so confident. And I get onto the finger, full confidence, I'm riding, and all of a sudden, I'm just like, I do a heel side turn and I look to my left and I just realize the finger that connects and goes to the bottom is the next runnel over.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't actually get there. I quickly tried to get over there and then I ended up just getting stuck in the runnel above like a however big ice fall cliff, like had to go back on kind of billy goat. So then I just on site rode 4,500 feet of this mountain. Just didn't, you know, I was so set on my line. So it was pretty scary, honestly, because I found myself like, oh, dude, I got to figure this out. I'm on site. It's all blind.
That's actually super scary. So that's why the first line you see, you go, and then it just ends.
I should put the raw GoPro because it's pretty spicy. It's if it wasn't for Mount Baker, I'd probably just would have been frozen.
right. Yeah, that's nuts. You should pull that GoPro footage. That's sick.
And then the second run, we're going up, and I saw where I missed the turn.
Yeah.
And it's so hard because there's a million trees, but there was one tree. I was like, I cannot forget that tree.
Right.
Like, that's my marker.
Yeah. I think you might say something like that at the top. Riders left, air.
Riders left, air, hard left.
And then the second line wide open is ridge. One of the best runs of my life.
I'm excited. Just
one of the best runs anyone's ever done. Really, on film? It's nuts.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's
really
nuts.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, you're one of my favorite riders to watch ride. Obviously, you're probably one of most people's favorite riders to watch ride. Because I was going to ask you, does the excitement start from when your eyes open? Like, are you like, all right, today's the day? And then the whole way there, you're frothing and you're happy? Or are you just like a regular dude, kind of get up there, and then all of a sudden, as soon as you're on your board, you're hopping around and you're... And the happiness comes out and you're just like in your spot.
It varies. Some days it takes me a while, but then once I get to the mountain, I kind of get in my zone and I get fired up. Other days I wake up and I'm just like ready to go.
Yeah.
In that instance, I was pretty nervous, so it was hard to get really fired up because I was quite nervous and scared.
You feel it in the beginning. You're wiping your board. You're clicking your bindings. Click your bindings like a couple extra clicks.
I crank them tight.
Yeah.
But in a lot of times, that's a perfect example of I was really excited, but I was also nervous. I'm trying to stay calm, trying to stay focused. And then when I finish, literally I break down in just happiness.
Yeah.
Because I get to the point where I can finally release.
Yes.
And have all of the happiness and gratification come out.
Yeah, you start shouting at the end and it's guttural. It's real. I'll cut it in here. It's you can tell that you're what just happened. It worked. And it's crazy. There's only part where you slow down to not even a stop. That's a nuts line to ride like that.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Also, it's funny. I've been in a few scenarios. I'm so lucky and I really appreciate Travis on so many levels. And I've been fortunate enough to spend a lot of time in the mountains with him. And then sometimes this is a good example of he finds this run and he's like, I'm going to ride this run. And you're kind of like, yeah, that's a nice run. It's really nice. And you're kind of like, I guess I'll take the spicy one over here. That's a little more technical.
I never thought of that. I never thought, of course he's going to pick the cherry, the just absolute cherry. Cause he's like, I found this.
Yeah.
This is the run. So you're going to have to take second pick, a couple more things that he looked at and went, maybe not that.
But it's amazing. Still. And leading up to it, we're like, let's take a warm-up run. We'll get eyes on the side. So we're up there. We grab one of the guides. We do this run from the top, just mellow ridge pillows. And then we're like, we'll ride that to the ice fall, we'll cut over the Abbey path, and then the next chute goes to the valley bottom. So we go, Travis is going, I give him, 30 seconds, I drop in, kind of cruising. We get down to here on the radio, he's like, hey, cut over a little higher, don't follow my track all the way down. I'm like, okay, cool. So I kind of get eyes on his track, and I'm like, all right, I'll cut over here. The next ridge, what looked like a bump, was a pretty big ridge. So we're kind of billy goating up this ridge, finally get on top, and then to get down the ridge was just ice chutes and trees stuff. So he gets in there, he's like a couple hundred feet below me, I'm in there, guide comes in behind me, and he's like, oh, this is kind of spicy. Meanwhile, I'm down climbing trees. It's like riding some of the Baker runs, but on steroids. I'm like down climbing, like,
is that
50
what's
feet.
At the end of Velvet Castle? Where,
I think
yeah,
so.
Where you're like, hey, Trav, how's this one look? Nothing. You don't hear anything. It's just, you're just so, yeah, that's gnarly, dude. That looks
do this run.
Sketch.
Luckily, at one point in the day, we were chatting with the guide. He's like, oh, you live in Glacier? That's cool. Like, I lived in Glacier for a couple of years. I loved it.
Sick.
And so we all get down this crux, and Travis and I are looking at each other like, dude, this guy is about to call it. Like, we might be done for the day. And he just looks at us and goes, he's like, whew, that was kind of spicy, boys. And we're like, yeah. We're like, to the top? And he's like, yeah, to the top. And we're like, whew, like, these runs are going to be easy now. So that was like we had such a spicy
yeah.
warm-up run
yeah.
that ended up taking like an hour
oh,
or
wow.
maybe longer. I don't right. It was a long
and
time.
And you've got helicopters out
so
there.
So then it was
this
just
like
a game
big deal.
On.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was the
when
start.
Do you first meet Travis? Like, not to make it all about Travis, but like, what's, are you, because you got on quick late.
Yeah.
Compared to him, right? He's been on there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I first met Travis in New Zealand. I was there with Forum.
Sick.
And I was with Pat Moore. Snapped my arm in half.
Oof.
We were chilling in Wanaka. Quicksilver had a house.
Sick.
We went over there and I met Travis very briefly. And he was like, oh, you got to take this. Like, this will help you heal. Gave me some Arnica pills.
Sick.
I'd never heard of Arnica at that yeah. point. I'm, you know, 18 years old. Don't see Travis again. Fast forward a couple years, we qualified at the Baker Bank slalom like 5th and 6th, I want to say.
Yeah.
So I wish I had the photo. It's like Temple, Terry. It's the most insane lineup. And I was like 5th and he was 4th qualifying.
Amazing.
We're in the start shack and he just like turns around and he's like, give her hell. Just gives me the hardest high five I've ever had. My hand, I felt like was broken. And then I just see him pull out of the start shack. I go in the start shack. I'm looking down, big tree corner. He just blows out, like takes out the fencing. And
oh,
then
God.
Like Amy looks at me and she's like, racer ready? Like, you ready? And I was like, yep, ready. I go. And then I was at the third time, which stuck was... I was at Baldface. DCP wow. invited me for a yes shoot.
Sick.
Met Jeff. Really hit it off with Jeff. He invited me. He's like, hey, I can give you a discounted rate. I want you to stay this next session. So I stay. It's like Ben Ferg and a couple other people. And then at one point, Jeff calls Travis and was like, hey, you should invite Austin on your New Year's trip.
Wow.
And he was like, oh, yeah, I've heard of Austin. Like, he's kind of like a rail kid, maybe, or just like, but he's like, oh, he had some backcountry footage in that Forum video. And so he invited me on this New Year's trip. Robin was the tail gunner.
No.
So
way.
Met Robin, really met Travis, and then he, from that trip, was like a huge advocate for me to be on Quicksilver.
Dope.
And then, yeah, if it wasn't for Jeff calling Travis, being like, hey, invite Austin on this New Year's trip, and then me going on the trip, hanging with Travis, just boarding, it was cool. It was like the whole Jackson crew, like... So from there, it was, yeah, he kind of advocated.
On.
And then from there, like Todd Richards called me and then Brian Fox, they kind of all helped make it happen.
That's so sick.
And then from there, it's what like Travis is just, yeah, he's pretty unreal how many opportunities he's like kind of.
Yeah. Razman talked about it too, just the way that he, you know, you go from watching Travis doing Travis stuff, like, cause what era of Travis is that? That's post fourth phase.
I think he had just finished filming it. Cause I want to say that fall I got on Quicksilver.
Yep.
And we all went to the world premiere in LA.
Sick.
So
no, that would have been amazing.
It was pretty.
I think the Prime Minister of Canada was at the one in Vancouver.
Oh, I bet. I think
he was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nuts. How rad. Yeah. So also another guy that I heard you shout out on, I think on Jody's podcast, it might have been on the other podcast. You got a friend you did a podcast with. His life story or something like
that.
Oh,
yeah.
It was really
sick. Yeah, he's a friend from the island.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude's Robin.
Rad. Yeah. You shout out Crush.
Oh, Lisa. Yeah.
So I always knew that Crush did the park manager job. And like this year I did an interview with Tyler Nickel, who's like a legendary shaper, and he does a park up in Baldy now. And they're so important. Shapers are so important.
They are.
Park builders, community builders. And Crush has gone on to be like the event guy now. But I forgot, he was like that dude that was like, didn't he reach out to, he reached out to someone on your behalf.
Yeah, so like, Crush, my beginnings started with Crush at Snoqualmie.
Yeah.
He ran the park marketing. He really kind of helped me build a foundation for being more than a snowboarder. Like how he was the first person that was like, this is what you do to get a shot.
Wow. Like
this is what it takes.
Wow.
And I was probably 14.
So just a kid.
Yeah. And I was on the Syndicate, which was the Snoqualmie team. And he's like, hey, we're going to shoot an ad. Like, I want to shoot an ad with you for Snoqualmie.
Rad.
So he had the spot picked out. It was this big dead stump. And he was like, this is what goes into it. Like, you pick the spot. We built it. He was filming. And there was a photographer there. And I just hiked this stump for hours. And he was the first person where it was like, I was just trying to blunt to fakie.
Yeah.
And I did it in however many tries. And he's like, no, that wasn't it. And I was like, it's like, what do you mean? He's like, no, like you gotta be composed. Like you can't roll down your arm, like can't roll down the windows.
Yeah.
He's like, you're on your binding. He's like, you need to be like fully like on your tail. Like you need your board pressed.
Wow.
Like you need to have like that moment of kind of perfection. And I just battled it and finally got it. But yeah, he helped like ingrain those fundamentals of this is how you get a clip. Like you need to watch the shot. You need to ask like the person you're riding with or the filmer. You're like, yo, was that good? Like,
right.
They're like, no, you like waved your arms or you opened up or I don't know. You kind of like wheelied and dragged your arm.
Right. Or I didn't quite get it. I cut your head off. That happens a lot because it is a back and forth, isn't it? Right. Like, did you get the shot? You feel like you got it. And the guy's like, almost. You want to do one more? You're like, not really. You're
like, I've already hiked this thing 50 times. No, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. Kind of jumping all around here, but the footage in Nelson.
Oh yeah,
I'd seen it when it came out, but to hear you talk about like Justin's just on he's on that Travis level where he's like talking to the city and being like, "Could you close down this road?" And they put up barriers and stuff for that.
Yeah,
because it really looks very very natural. And there's a lot of shots of city riding of different genres that make it through that you go. Well, I don't know the backstory, but to hear the backstory of that must have been such a trip.
Yeah.
To get to ride Nelson under perfect Nelson conditions. and also kind of have the blessing of the city, like, yeah, hit the rails, do the thing. Like, it's such a good segment. It's like timeless. That's, and you have Thank so you. Many different ones where it's like, it's so many different genres. So there was like a rail Austin, like, whole era.
Yeah, there is a, so that year was the same year I went to Baldface.
Oh, wow.
And met Jeff and met Travis.
So you're hungry.
But I was semi-living in Justin's garage with, oh, wow. Like Garrett Warnick was there a lot.
Yep.
But at that point, I felt like I reached a part of my life where I could, for once in my snowboard career, kind of mold it how I wanted it to look like create my own identity.
Rad.
And because growing up, getting on Forum, like, I wasn't a rail rider. I mean, I rode park, but I didn't go on a rail trip until Forum brought me on a rail trip.
Insane.
And so then I was kind of like, not forced, but it was like a chapter of my life.
Yep.
And I really wanted to transition out of rail riding. In that year, we were hanging in Nelson. There was a great snow year. They had so much snow. And I was like, I want to do a rail segment that's all natural speed. I want the spots to be, I want it to be all motion. So yeah, Justin pretty much lined it up with getting in touch with the city where we had, yeah, in the morning, we'd kind of talk. We're like, all right, we're going to go to this street. We literally called the cops and be like, hey, we want to hit this like sidewalk, like this street. And they're like, sweet, we can block it off from like 11 till noon, but then we have to open it up for lunch traffic or whatever.
Sure.
So we filmed that whole segment. And then, that being said, it was also very much inspired by Craig Kelly riding down the roofs in Trail.
Damn.
Where you're just like,
yeah, rad.
You know, he's not a rail rider by any means, but he rode this urban feature.
He started riding roofs around that time. Like, he rode a lot of roofs and Bored with the World.
Yeah. Which,
remember, like A-frames. He was, but yeah, no, it's an urban feature, and it's, there's something so special about that. That line, it sticks in your head because you're not on a mountain. You're not, it's the kind of thing you see in a city that you go, shit, that would be rad.
Yeah. You look at it and you're like, that's a cool feature. Like,
yeah.
I love the snowboard down that.
The flow that you have through Nelson is surreal because it at once looks like you did it for all first try because it's all in a row. And there's not like, you don't see like a lot of tracks or anything, you know? And also it's like polished tricks. Like, you've got rad shit all in a row. It's dope.
Thanks.
It's very, very well done.
Thank you.
And yeah, I mean, that's what happens when a rider with the kind of actual ability to do it and a filmer with the actual vision to capture it in a way that's really stunning. That's sick.
Yeah, there was, thank you. There was definitely a lot of good energy flowing that year. Like, between Justin and I and just like our crew and the people that were coming in and out, like Garrett Warnick, Manuel, I spent time with him, but that winter, that was amazing. But just, yeah, we were like on this wavelength of like trying to film unique urban stuff. And then also I wanted to transition out of rail riding. So I wanted to do something that was impactful.
Yeah.
That wasn't just like clip, clip, clip. And I thought, I was like, this is a great way to just transition out.
Dude, that's so sick.
'Cause
like kind of like a mic drop, just like, all right. That's enough rail riding for me. That was a rad segment, but
thanks.
Into the backcountry. That's dope, dude. That's unreal. So you start kind of steering your career at that point, kind of thinking, okay, I'm like, there must have been a decision around that time too, like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Because were you flirting with college just leading up to that, or had that been years
college
before?
Was a couple years before.
Yeah, yeah.
But at that time, it was post-Forum, and then I was writing for Yes, and I was briefly on Analog after Forum.
Yeah.
They brought me to Analog, and it was like myself, Nick Save, Danny Davis, Mikkel Bang. And the first year was awesome.
Yeah.
We did like a big photo shoot, but then they kind of just let it fizzle out. And I literally, they didn't really do anything. And then my contract ended, and they were kind of like, hey, we're just going to keep it Burton Riders. And then they kind of didn't do anything with it for a couple of years. But anyways, I didn't have an outerwear sponsor. I was writing for Yes. But since Forum, my sights were on Mervin.
Growing up here, Mervin would have kind of always been in the back of your mind, I'd imagine.
Yeah, like growing up here, you know, Jamie Lynn was a huge, like, he was the best growing up. Like, it was like him, Peter Lyon. And it was kind of crazy. Like, I trip out on it because I rode for Forum with Peter Lyon.
Yeah,
and then now ride for Lib with Jamie. But I just, like, have always loved Mervin. They're from the Northwest. Mike and Pete, they're still, like, running the company and heavily involved with board building. I love that the boards are built here. And just the family vibe, like, of the Cummins and Jamie Lynn, and they just have such a good, authentic family vibe. So my sights were always set on that, but it just took a lot of time.
Sure.
And then eventually it came to a point where it all worked out.
Yeah.
And I, like, couldn't pass it up.
Yeah.
And it was... like, I'm super thankful for DCP and that crew.
Oh, so did Mervin kind of buy you away from DCP, like, mid-contract or something?
No,
like that?
No, I left, yes.
Yeah.
And I kind of, I left, and the Mervin thing wasn't even official yet.
Right.
It was like, I kind of got to a point where I was like, I think I have to step away to really
to make this
take
happen.
The chance.
Wow. That would have been tough.
It was scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it worked out.
Yeah. Obviously, it worked out rad. And what a nice, what a great team that you have there. Because now you've got Travis's Lib, mm-hmm. and the Cummins family's always been a part of it. And I mean, all the way down to Cannon now, like, which is super sick. Watching him the last few years, just like, his game has gone so huge.
Yeah. He's unreal. It literally was overnight. It was like, he was the little Grom, like, following Temple around, and then one winter, all of a sudden, he was like full-grown Charger.
Those big boosting errors that everybody's doing now. Like, it's nuts to see, you know, I saw him and Arthur Longo and a few other rippers up at...
Jaden Chomlak.
Jaden was up there, and it was just nuts to see... I don't know. It's kind of come back, you know, like the Seymour kids back in the, you know, back in those big, huge days, like, people were going that big, you know, for photo shoots and whatnot. And they'd block it off and build it big. But it's been a few years since stuff has been that big. And now it's in a smoothness level that's like, seems impossible.
Yeah.
Like, the landings are so clean now. Like, perfect.
Definitely.
It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. So another one of those clips that you and I talked about last year, and there's a bald face talk about it, was the front seven? The Baker shot.
Oh, off the Beast.
Off the Beast.
Yeah.
It's, and like, I had no idea. It's so weird when you see stuff on Instagram, because without any context, it just look, you're like, wow, that's just amazing. That's the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. And oh my God, and there's an avalanche, and oh my God, he's fine. Like, what did I just see? You know what I mean? But when you break it down over, I think the talk was like an hour or something about like how many times you'd been there and you knew it was going to be a good day and you'd check the forecast and you'd, you know, and you had to get there to get ahead of everybody. Like that in itself is like, you know, I can remember when that line would stay good for a couple of days.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's 30 years ago, but, and people wouldn't even hit it. It's just, now it's so, I don't know. It's like, it's your job, I guess. So you're thinking like, okay, I'm going to like, I want to get this clip. I've hit it a few times. I'm feeling good. I know the line.
Yeah. I don't think, I wouldn't say job is the right word for that, but more, I guess, desire.
Sure.
In the sense of the past few years, I've been a huge advocate for pushing the boundaries of relatable snowboarding. Mm-hmm. I think snowboarding, sometimes it's hard to go snowboarding for a lot of people, but, and especially with professional snowboarding, it gets into like snowmobiles and helicopters. Sure. So over the past couple of years, my whole thing is like, how do you just progress the sport in your backyard? Like with what you have, like with what's attainable. And COVID obviously played a part, just having to be home.
Yeah.
But it was the best thing that ever happened, being able to spend years, multiple years in a row, just at home.
Yeah.
Because it makes you appreciate not only the terrain, but the things that you're able to do within the terrain. And so my mind was like, how, like, what can I do to push snowboarding in this area? And that was one of them. I was like, I want to hit the beast. Like, there's the famous shot. I wish I knew who it was. I want to say it's in Fear of a Flat Planet. Someone's going down Slingshot and they air over him.
Oh, wow.
They air over and he's on like a, he's on a litigator.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Jeff told me who it was, and I was like, I need to write this down because I have the worst memory. But it's like the sickest shot. And then I want to say Lucas DeBari tried to switch back five it years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know. So it was one of these things. I was like, no one's hit it in a long time. Like, people air off it every once in a while.
Yeah.
But I was like, this is my goal. Like, I want to like draw a line down the beast.
Oof.
And I hit it twice, just front three. And Sean Lucy, who I film with, one of my best buds, he was out of town. And so like, I think Ika filmed it on his iPhone. One time. Another time, I was just free riding with some friends and I hit it and someone filmed it from the 8 lift shack.
Yeah.
And so essentially, Lucy gets home. I'm like, dude, we got to hit the beast. Like, we need to film it. Like, I've been kind of, you know, testing it out, riding it, and it's a go. Like, once there's a window, we should hit it. And the thing I love about Baker is there's so many good snowboarders that are motivated.
Yeah.
But obviously it's, you know, that's a, at that point I had been hitting it. So it's kind of, this happens a lot. Like, there'll be features that don't get hit and then someone will unlock it.
Nice.
And you're like, oh, that's I remember that. And it happens too. People ride stuff where I'm like, dude, I totally forgot about that. Like, I'm going to go ride it. So that being said, the day was perfect. It was, you know, snow, we got a good storm, started warm, ended cold, was ending in a high pressure. Snowpack was stable. There was like isolated wind slabs. So I knew that was the spot. I was like, anything goes, like this landing could go. But I wasn't too worried about it. But I knew I needed to get up early. So yeah, we just had to do it. And there was a group of us. It was sick. There was like six of us, all like local shredders. And we all like, everyone had the same idea. Like we were that, like, they weren't far behind us. And we all like, I set the boot pack. We all got up there. We like high fived. And then I didn't tell anybody I was going front seven. But I knew I'd front threed it twice. And at that point, you kind of, but the way my mind works is like, I could front three it right now, or I could go front seven. It's like riskier. But if I land it, like, I'm going to be so satisfied. And like, that'll be the line that I want to paint.
Yeah, dude.
And so I didn't tell anybody. And in the GoPro raw, you kind of hear it. Someone's like, oh, they're like, oh, you're going to front three again? I was like, I kind of like mumble and like stutter a bit. I was like, oh, something like that. I don't know what I said.
I love it.
But then, yeah, it
is your heart and your throat at this point, or because you've hit it a few times and where's your mind? You're like, stomp. Are you like, okay, just come around and put it down?
Kind of just come around. I was feeling pretty confident. I was pretty relaxed, I'd say. I was a little nervous. I was riding with Forrest Bailey and Lucas Watts that day.
Red.
And then Josh Poyline and Sean Lucy were shooting and filming. And I knew if it popped, I was like, I don't think it would go big enough to bury me. Like it would. And I trusted my crew. Like we've all done Abbey courses together. Like we trust each other's, abilities. And, I really tried to lay in the slope to just get that little convex to roll, which in hindsight, it's like you're not really going to get anything to pop there because it's such a small little roll. But yeah. The snow felt good, felt stable. And I just remember going into it like it looked so perfect. And then honestly, when I landed, I instantly was not shocked, but I was like really stoked, kind of surprised.
Yeah.
And then that instantly turned to, oh shit, like seeing it spiderweb in front of me.
In front. And then it hits you from behind, doesn't it? Sweeps your legs or something?
So it breaks and I'm like, I'm just going straight. Like I'm just got to outrun. Right as I'm going straight, it steps down and there was a staunch wall that popped up. Like when the two. Slides kind of like, and it created this launch ramp, but I'm hauling ass. I hit the launch ramp that shoots me to the back, like my back.
Yeah.
From that point, everything stopped. And I was sitting there. I was like, oh no, I've lost all my momentum and now I'm a sitting duck. And right when I stood up, it just hits me on the back. Throws me over, and then from there it's all instinct of like I'm head first, I need to get my feet, I like fight, get my feet, and I'm just swimming. And I've never had to swim before.
Oh wow.
But all your instincts just kick in, and I was just swimming as hard as I could, and it works. It keeps you, they teach you that for a reason. But then at one point, as it fanned out, everything just gets so thick and it's a lot harder. And I go under for a second. You kind of see it in the video.
Yeah.
But I get covered, but it wasn't enough. And I just, at that thought, I was just like, I remember, like, I think I screamed. I was just like, not today, or like something. I just put my arms as high as I could and did like a, pulled myself up and I just shot out to like my chest, and then it all settled. And then I radioed up and was like, hey, it slid. I'm good. I can dig myself out. And there was kind of like a little calmness. Like there was a lot of froth and energy. And then it was a little bit of calm.
That same kind of release you were talking about at the bottom of the Velvet Castle. Yeah. Just like, okay, it's done. I'm not dead. I kind of landed it, and then something happened. Now you're taking an inventory going, what the fuck was it?
Yeah. So then I radioed to the crew at the top. Everyone kind of dispersed. No one rode Sunny D or Football Fields, but they rode some other lines. Nothing else slid that day. Mm. And the whole, by the end of the day, people like had gone back to the runs next to the beast. They rode like 50-50, like all these lines.
And they nothing didn't slide.
The arm was tracked. Nothing else slid. It was just like that one perfect isolated wind pocket was like below a rock face. So there's like a trigger point. Obviously, probably like pressure from landing. But yeah, that was wild. I learned a lot from it. And it
Nuts that that's the first time you'd ever been in an avalanche that you're swimming in. Like I imagine, from what I've seen out in the backcountry in Whistler, like it's pretty touch and go. Like it's you, if you watch like that next tier down local guy video where they're like the sled necks, they get out there and they get after it. Like there's an avalanche every second, third shot because people are going out so early now.
Yeah.
And it's, they just get used to it. They know how to outrun it. They've ridden that line before, so they know which way it goes. Slough management kind of thing, when it's not even slough sometimes, it's like full-on avalanches.
Yeah, slough will take you out.
So yeah, I was imagining that you would have had a lot of experience with slides before that where you just, swim your way out and get out. But no.
I've definitely, like I've popped some off.
Yeah.
Some similar size, some a little bigger.
Yeah.
But I've been fortunate enough. The first time to Alaska, actually, first run in Valdez, we get to this chute. At this point, I don't think I have any Abby training. Briefly, just through friends. After this trip, I was like, I need to figure this out. I need to gain the knowledge.
Do the proper thing.
Either way. We show up, we go helling, we have a 10-day window that's all snow. And so the first day is sunny. We're like, we got to get out. We go out, we get to this chute, this big tube. There's a rock island in the middle at the bottom, so you have to go right or left of it. But there's not really a high point in the chute. And we talk to the guide. I've never worked with a guide at this point. I'm 20 years old, 19, 20. And he's like, yeah, man, it's good to go. Like, have fun.
Oh, wow.
And I drop in. It's kind of a, like I dropped in on the ridge. I roll in and essentially I ski cut the slope. The whole thing goes.
Oh, my God.
Or I see it breaking, but I couldn't. Looking back now, I could have pulled up.
Yeah.
But at this point in time, I didn't know how to mitigate this situation. And my thought was like, I need to go SFD.
I
pointed it down. I see the whole thing go. It's breaking, cracking under my feet. And I just pointed out the chute. At the bottom of the chute, I just cut under the rock cliff and like let it all go by. And it was like a solid 2-foot crown, like went huge.
Oof.
And I was watching it like, whoa. I guess this is Alaska. Where now, like if I, even when I watch the shot, I'm like, yeah, the experienced snowboarder, it's the top of a line. You do the ski cut.
Yeah.
You watch it go, then you ride it.
Yeah.
And I should have kept cutting, but instead I was like, it's breaking, heel side turn, go down the mountain. Oh my God. So I got really lucky.
Yeah.
But, yeah. That being said, after that, yeah, I really took into account of trying to gain as much knowledge. And then even now, like I try and do the risk maturity course at Baldface every year.
Yeah.
Because it's such a well-tailored course of real life scenarios of working with your crew and getting time in the mountains with people like John Buffery.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, Demian Whitley and Joel McBurney. like the, I'm 33 years old and I like get excited just talking about this. Cause I'm like, dude, I get to take an Abbey course with like my crew. Cause it's tailored towards professional snowboarders filming in the backcountry.
Yeah.
And we're learning from Craig's mentors and friends, like in the darkest white, you like hear like Dem and Joel are like these kids, like the local dudes in Nelson that Craig is going and just like gaining time in the mountains. And like Buff is like helping Craig along his journey. So, it's so cool that like Buff's knowledge runs deep in the snowboard community.
Yeah.
And that so many people get to learn from him and the crew at Baldface. And that I think it really helps a lot of people in the community that film in the backcountry is a profession. Like I constantly hear Buff's voice in my head when I'm out there. And nice. I'm like, when I'm in a situation or not in a situation, when I'm like, when I'm in the mountains and I'm trying to make a decision and figure it out, like I will hear Buff's voice and it like makes me so happy because I'm like, what would Buff do right now?
That's really
rad.
And
I'm like, no, like follow your gut instinct. Like we've gained the skills, we have the knowledge, we use our tools that we've sharpened over time, and you have to trust that. And then to hear like these echoes of like trust the process, you're like, I feel like it keeps a lot of us safe.
That's so sick to hear.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's, yeah, I'm so thankful
well
for
in
those
their
guys.
Risk maturity, it's like maturing, like the sport has matured. And it's like, we're not like when you look at old footage of like, I saw the hatchet line and not the one at KT-22, like, it's the 30th anniversary.
The Mendenhall Towers.
Of Mendenhall.
Yeah.
And like,
dude, that line is so sick.
I think there were people in the group that were like, it can't be ridden. Like guides that were like, you can't ride snow that steep.
Wasn't it, cause Mike wrote it, right?
Dave
Hatchett wrote the Mendenhall Towers.
Yeah.
And didn't like in one of the posts I saw, Mike was like, dude, like, I don't know. Like this is crazy. Like, am I going to watch my brother like get severely injured?
That's where they were at. And I mean, that's probably smart thinking because the way that things were being done up in Alaska was like, there was a lot of cowboys up there just doing crazy shit.
Yeah.
Like you see that Mark Gallup shot of the guys on the pontoons and you're like, think of how insane that is. You can't just do stuff like that now.
No.
In fact, there's like limiters on places you can go. Like Super Spines is closed. Mm-hmm. Like it's not, you can't go back there. It's protected. And even to get there, I think it's a far trip,
mm-hmm.
and you have to be back before 4 o'clock now. They used to come back in the dark.
Yeah. Well, now I know that a lot of zones in Alaska, they'll be closed for a year or two.
Yeah.
But then they open back up and to do with wildlife, essentially. I think the goats, right?
Sure.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
And then I also know that this is quite a few years ago, but when I was there with Justin one year, they're at Alaska heli skiing. They're like, we get 10 lands a year on goat land.
Okay.
But we were there at the end of April and they had like 6 left.
Oh, damn.
So we got to like ride this face you know, they weren't riding in the winter because they're like, well, we don't want to use up our landings or whatever. So we actually got to ride a couple lines and use the last few of their landings in the
That's amazing.
The territory, which is kind of cool. But it's also, the wild, it used to be so wild up there.
So wild.
It was like fly anywhere. I mean, also, I feel like budgets were infinite, it was just
endless.
The cost
budgets
of it was way cheaper,
super low. Yeah, Martin Gallant was talking about the chips that you just have like a pocket full of chips. You tip someone like a heli drop, you know what I mean, at the bar. Oh yeah, that was a good drink. There's a take one, you have to hike out to the road or whatever, you know? Like, it's nuts.
Yeah.
It's nuts what they were doing. And yeah, like I'm thinking of Selaznik old TB footage and thinking like, here's this guy from Tahoe who's like a jibber, you know, he's on the cutting edge of freestyle snowboarding. And they were kind of separated at that time too. There were these like big mountain riders like Tex and guys that did that sort of stuff. And then there were like, I mean, the freestyle stuff was still 720s on park jumps and stuff, you know what I mean? But when Noah goes up there, all of a sudden there's this magician who, the way that he rode that stuff so confidently, so flowy, like, it's, I mean, and then you think that's 30 years ago.
I know.
32 years ago he was doing that stuff. That's nuts.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's cool that I feel like people still get opportunity, but it's really challenging. Like, Alaska is so unattainable in a helicopter setting.
Sure.
Because it's so expensive.
Mm.
And then you're paying all this money. And then at that point, there's other crews up there. And then it's like, if crew A has more money than crew B, they get priority. Just like,
yeah,
it's pretty wild. But watching like the old TB movies, like, I mean, I still watch, like, I love Johan.
He's unbelievable.
To me, like, I'm watching like him, even like Tom Burt, like, some of the stuff, all his first ascents, I'm just like, dude, watching him ride Pyramid and all
it's
of that.
So smooth, like, too. He's just so smooth.
Unreal.
And he's like a tall dude.
Yeah.
Like his style is so smooth.
Mm-hmm.
It's nuts. Yeah.
And then like Johan, he was like not only going faster than everybody, but he was also jibbing Alaska.
It's unbelievable.
Like all his cornice, like backtailing cornices and like tail pressing cornices. You're just like, he was doing this in like TB6.
Yeah.
And like now Jody and I are like, dude, we gotta jib some cornices.
Right.
This is sick.
Yeah. I think that's the difference, is like, for all the rad stuff that Johan did, you know, his arms are flailing because it's never been done before. He's not at that level that snowboarding's progressed to, where, you know, when I think of Jody Wojniak, I think of just such amazing style, such easy on the eyes. Everything that he does is like, it feels perfect. And I love that. I was talking with Devin about it, about how like it was for a moment, it was like, who can go the biggest? And I mean, you talked about that big front side three. Where was the 110 foot insanity
that
jump?
Eagle Pass.
Yeah. Yeah. Which it's huge. It's insanely huge. And in that era, there was like these things that, like, I think there were 100 foot park jumps.
Oh, yeah.
In resorts. Like, it's nuts.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I ever hit a public 100-foot park jump, but I feel like Colorado had some pretty
large. Otterstrom was talking about it. He's like, maybe it's a 50-footer.
Yeah.
Even a 50-foot jump is a big, big jump for the public. It's just open to the public and try their hand at like daredevil 50-foot. Like, imagine your dad falling off a 50-foot park jump. Like, that's nuts.
That would be wild.
But, so there was this era where it was like, let's bigger, 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 bigger. And then it's toned down to where it's smoother, smoother, smoother. And now it's going bigger and smoother.
Bigger and smoother. That's the dream.
Yeah, that's it. It's nuts. It's wonderful for someone like me that's been watching snowboarding media for 35 years, that all of a sudden, like, I remember playing video games where it's like, imagine. And now that's like real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are doing that. We talked about it the other day on text about who's going to kickflip the road gap, because someone's going to do it.
I know. I joke about it.
It's time, though. Like, it's almost there. You know what I mean? Like, maybe not on a snow skate, like a pow surf.
Yeah.
You'd probably kick flip.
I feel like you'd want to do it on a snow skate, but with the big ski. The big ski.
Yeah. I mean, I moved out here in 1993. I saw the road gap. And that was where I, as a person who was trying to be a pro snowboarder, I was like, I'm not going to claim that I'll ever do that. Like, I knew in my heart, like, that's too much consequence and too big. I don't have the balls to step to that. It's huge. It's massive. There are times where it's smaller than,
yeah,
but it's still insane.
It looks bigger than it is.
Sure.
It really is. There's another jump here called home run.
Yeah.
That I'm like, if you're like, do you want which jump scarier, home run or the road gap? I'm 10 out of 10 home run is scarier.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
Because the road gap, you actually have more speed than you need.
Okay.
And by the time you see the road, you're over it.
So is home run also technically like a gap over cat track?
It's over a cat track.
I saw my friend Brad went off home run to flat on the track. Oh. And that was the end of him trying to be a pro snowboarder. I saw him 20 years later, his knees still were messed up from that.
Yeah, because that one, depending, sometimes they groom the cat track wider.
Yep.
And then where the jump is, there's a little hill. It's a mega ramp for snowboarding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
that's the one Pat McCarthy like still hitting.
Oh yeah,
all the time.
Yeah,
it's such a sick jump.
Oh, it's amazing.
But
we hit it this year.
That's gnarlier than the road gap because of that lack of speed. Which is, he went. My buddy Brad went right to the top of it. You know what I mean? Maybe even packed down a little ramp to get a little extra speed.
Yeah,
and it was a no go. Like nowhere close. Like middle of the road. Mm-hmm. Like, but that's where we used to go early season because you could just air off the cat track, mm-hmm. right? Like,
there's so many good jump. Like that whole Granny's area is, that's the training grounds for. I mean, that's Mount Baker's Terrain Park.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
It's sweet. Some springs you'll hike out there and it's just like there'll be 20 jumps built.
That's amazing.
And there's just people flying everywhere.
It's just right there too from the parking lot. Yeah. It's pretty easy to get to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. When did Mount Baker become your home mountain? Like were you Snoqualmie all the way up until?
Yeah, when did I get a, I think I got my first season's pass at a mountain when I was like 15.
Yeah.
At Snoqualmie.
Yeah.
And then I had a pass. My first season pass was Mount Baker.
Oh, sick.
Fifth graders ride for free. I got a pass that year. My mom loves Mount Baker. So we came quite a bit.
That's very cool.
That year, we were actually just talking about the other day, we were riding Baker together. And that season, she let me skip school for my birthday and we rode Baker. And they used to have the sickest terrain park on chair 8. And it ended with this huge channel gap into a hip.
Wow.
And that was, I don't know what birthday it was. It was pretty young, but.
Skipping
school. Yeah, she would just be like ripping the groomer next to the park as I hit all the jumps.
That's unreal.
But we moved to Glacier in 2016, 2017.
Yeah. You and Robin. So when you met Robin at Baldface, did sparks fly there? Like, and you guys were...
I think sparks flew for me. But we met that season filming with Justin, where I like met Jeff and Travis. She was a tail guide. And then we exchanged numbers. Justin and I were filming in Whistler quite a bit that year. It was awesome. Chad Chomlack hosted us and like let us live in his basement.
Dude, that's sick.
And Robin and I were kind of chatting a little bit. I was really into it. She was like, I don't know. He's kind of just like, who is this dude? And then
it's got to be tough for a girl in the snowboard industry too. Like, I've heard Jess Kamira talk about, like, I just don't want anything to do with anyone that would be seen as someone who's helping my career. Like, you're trying to, like, you're trying to blaze your own path, you know what I mean? And you don't want to, you know, shack up with like a team manager or somebody that people go, oh, she's just on that trip because her boyfriend's the guy or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, people say that, but I never, I don't know. Either way.
She was holding her own, man.
Yeah. Like, I mean, she's way more successful than I am in snowboarding. But yeah. So anyways, that winter, I was just like, I was like, oh, I really like this girl. Like, she's awesome. And then finally, we got invited to the Zigzag, which was a bank slalom. It was when Drinkwater was still going. Jeff invited Brian, Austin, and Curtis to like host this bank slalom. They put together a crew, and she just texted me and was like, hey, do you want to carpool? And I was like, yeah, let's carpool. And we kind of just hit it off. Like, we drove from Whistler, hit like the worst Vancouver traffic. It took us 2 days to get there, like, because the Vancouver traffic like set us back. So then we stopped halfway. And then I think that road trip just really kind of like we connected. And then that spring, that was March. And then we, by that point, we went snowboarding in Whistler a couple times together in the backcountry. And we just like really started enjoying each other's company. We started to like build this relationship, just like a friend relationship at this point. And then we went to Alaska. She was filming for Full Moon. I was filming for Absinthe. And that's kind of where we connected. And then from there, we were like, should we book a trip to Costa Rica?
Oh, nice.
Like a vacation.
Oh, so that's
we
so cool.
Ended up, yeah, I drove my camper and two sleds up to Alaska. Was filming for Absinthe. And then Robin and I stayed till like the very end. Her crew left. And then she had an open spot on the ferry because Jamie ended up driving her truck home. And so like, I got to put my truck and sleds on the ferry with her truck and sleds. Both of our crews had left. We were like the last ones up there. Nice. We took the ferry back and then went to Costa Rica, and now we're married and stoked.
That's
but
awesome.
Going back to like, I think it's, for me, it's so like, I love having a partner that I can do all the things I love to do with, because, and I do realize like we're both so fortunate and we're in a very unique situation, but we've built this relationship where like we support each other, and no matter, we've gone, both have gone through ups and downs in our career through our relationship, but just having that support system and that understanding has been huge. And like, to be able to go and just ride the arm together, or just have a pow day together, or like go surf together, or, you know, like we share that mutual love for the outdoors,
yeah,
and the mountains.
Your life looks just so fun, because like you guys are constantly on a trip.
Yeah.
Here, there.
It is.
Everywhere.
We definitely work our asses off. Like our summers are like kind of our work time, but it's also like our time to really connect.
Yeah.
Because in the winter, it's like, for instance, like I'm in Glacier right now. She's in Norway. I'm going to Banff, and then she's coming home, and then I come home from Banff. She's going to Japan. So the summers for us is like our time to really like get grounded and connect.
Cool.
But
that's really cool.
And then, yeah, we just kind of work on our life outside of snowboarding to stay afloat and
keep
the dream alive. But yeah, having that support system is like so important. And yeah, it's like,
you're lucky.
Very
so lucky.
Very lucky.
That's, yeah, both of you for sure. I think in the interview I had with her, she mentioned that while you guys were staying at Al Clark's little cabin, which I love so much that I got to stay in there, that she would come home you know, the first couple of days of filming and go like, I can't do this. Like, I'm so, you know, I don't want to try and quote her. She just was like, fuck, what am I doing here? Yeah. And you were like, you're here to, cause you ride good. And so just ride good. Yeah. Like just ride like you.
I remember that. Yeah. She was, however it happened, essentially I was just like, you're Robin. Just
yeah.
Be Robin.
That's it.
Cause that's why you're here. You're yeah. not here because you're another person. You're here because yeah. of yourself. So like dive into your strengths because.
Have you ever needed that pep talk when you're riding with Travis? Like where you're yeah. like, where you're watching what he's doing, you're going, well, that's not what I'm going to do.
I have. Yeah. And it's, I've had to give myself that pep talk a couple times.
Right.
And right. it's hard. And 1 year, I think I reached my limit and I actually, it was a mixture of things of like, I'd reached my adrenaline limit. I was kind
what,
of, I
yeah.
was,
what does that look like? What is your adrenaline limit?
We were just going and going. I think it was like, it was back to back trips mm-hmm. and it was pretty full on. And it got to a point and I was sick. I like, my body started shutting down. So I was sick. I was tapped. And I actually just like kind of melted down. I had to bump out of the field. I was like, it's not worth it. Like, I just need to, I got to sit out. It wasn't easy to do. And they rode an amazing face at sunset and it was awesome. But yeah, sometimes, and it, not always with him, but it, we all get to our limit where you're just like, all right, I need a reset. I've been going full throttle for a week.
Yeah.
I'm burnt. I need to let the body.
My boots
heal.
Are still wet. My legs are killing me.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. It takes a lot. I've gone through many phases where sometimes I'm confident. Other times I think it's, we all struggle and sometimes it's hard, to remember like your strengths and your wow. abilities.
Wow, man.
But
that's mind blowing. Thanks for sharing that. Cause yeah. that would not be my guess at like it. You make snowboarding look like the most fun ever. And like, you're the guy having the absolute most fun.
I mean, I'll agree with you on, I am definitely having the most fun,
that's
but I
right.
think we all, you know, we all have our yeah. days, but yeah. yeah, majority it's like, if I'm a professional snowboarder or not, like I'm riding
yeah.
every day if yeah. I can, you know, if like you can, that's my right. dream. It's
but you got to pay attention to, you know, what's going yeah. on in your body and your life, that whole thing.
Definitely.
Have you ever had a point in the last 20 years where you were looking going, okay, I don't think I'm going to be a pro snowboarder anymore. Now I'm going to, you know, do something else. Has that ever, or you just, I mean, obviously maybe that's a terrible question. Yeah. I'm starting to think like, oh, that's not that good of a question.
No, I mean, I'm constantly, I'd say the past couple of years, I'm constantly, not constantly, but I think a lot about life after snowboarding.
Right.
Because I would like to be prepared for that.
Sure.
But I'm also very focused on maintaining my career as long as I can.
Yeah.
With being fully aware that you just never know and that it'll be to, like, I want to have a good idea of at least a starting point for a backup plan.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the conversations I imagined having with you is this shifting landscape of like how important snowboarders, professional endorsement snowboarding is, right? Like it's been everything. In the early days, we bought boards that didn't even work because, you know, Steve Graham was on them or whatever, yeah. you know? Whereas nowadays, kind of everything sort of works.
It does.
It's not like, oh, I buy this because I don't know. I can get inspired and buy stuff because I see you riding it or I see somebody that I'm like, oh, I wish I could ride like that guy. Maybe this will help me a little. But it seems to be getting smaller and smaller. And I feel like it's pretty obvious this online shopping thing, because I was just a mailman for 15 years, has exponentially ramped up to where it's going to challenge the system, the distribution system, the shops, the pro riders, the selling direct to consumer. Why would you have anybody, you know, shilling the stuff? Just make it look right and make an Instagram ad. And so, like, you're a part of a group that was a lot bigger at one point and was making a lot more money at one point too. There was like, guys in your position were making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year for years.
I definitely have had conversations with older friends and I'm like, dude, that's what you got paid? That is awesome. Congrats.
It's nuts,
it
right?
It is not like that anymore.
Right, but. Right. Because there's an adjustment for how, you know, it's being pushed in two ways. How little can we pay people and still have them ride our stuff and do gnarly stuff? And also, you know, how much money are we making and how much can we put aside to like actually grow the sport or support the people that are actually doing it?
Yeah.
So those two things are, I mean, they're both under pressure, right?
Yeah. It's a dance of balancing it all. I think with snowboarding and a few other sports, I think action sports like snowboarding, surfing, skateboarding, I think, I mean, I'm not a golfer, but I imagine you could throw golfing into here as well. Where we need, I wish there was more core shops. We're very fortunate that we still have core snowboard shops. But the beauty about all these sports is I feel like if you have an ability, if you're a capable snowboarder, you don't want to buy a snowboard online. You might get a good idea of like, oh, I want this new Jamie Lynn, or I want this new Arthur Longo, or I want this new Blake Paul board, or whoever it may be. But if you're somewhat capable, I feel like you want to go into a shop. Hopefully it's like a core shop.
Yeah.
And you're going to want to touch it. You're going to want to flex it.
True.
You're going to want to like see the side cut. You're going to want to stand on it. And it's the, I just relate it to skateboarding. Like, I've never bought a skateboard online because I want to go into the shop, I want to throw it onto the carpet, and I want to stand on it. Even if it's the same anti-hero that I've skated three times before, like, I want to stand on it and make sure, all right, I like the concave, you know? And
I hope that's what kids are doing now.
And like golf, you know, like, you probably want to feel the weight of the club.
Don't you? Feel the grip, whatever. It's interesting what you're saying because, you worked at Snowboard Connection, didn't you?
Yeah, I worked at SnowCon through high school, out of high school. Yeah. And then actually my boss, owner of SnowCon, Adam Gerken, he's went on to work for Tactics, and they're actually just, they open up a new Tactics in Seattle.
So what's Tactics? Tactics?
Tactics is a snow skate shop.
Sick.
That started.
Sorry, snow and skateboarding, not snow skates.
No, yeah, not, they probably sell snow skates.
There is a snow skate shop across from Donner Ranch.
Is it really?
Which is super sick.
Sick.
Just snow skates.
But
I love it.
Yeah, they're opening up their new store in Seattle.
So Tactics is working. Like,
and like in Bellingham, we have WWS, and like Todd is killing it. And like you have that core shop. Like I went in there before Natural Selection to like pick up a few things. And, you know, like you walk in and he's playing the Community Project.
That's dope.
And like you talk about all things snowboarding. And there's like, it's like a quintessential like snowboard shop for Mount Baker. Like the Mount Baker snowboard shop isn't there anymore.
Oh,
but the
it's
ski
not?
Shop, I actually went in there to heat mold my boots.
Yeah.
And it's sick. They like sell all the Mervin boards. They've got like 32 in there. They've got a bunch of brands in there.
Damn.
So there still is like a culture for the in-person shop. And I think it's important because
I think so too.
It's some things it's great. Like, you know, you're traveling, you're like, I need a new book. And like, you're in Alaska and you're like, it's kind of sick. You can Amazon a book overnight.
Right.
But for snowboarding and that, I think we're in a good situation where we will maintain like the core, somewhat of a core shop. I hope so.
I really hope so too. Yeah. You know, I love visiting Squim and feeling that vibe, guys that are skating on their lunch breaks and
curb out front.
It's there because Mike wants to surf. You know what I mean? Like, that's just so dope.
They've got such a good oasis out there with the factory, and like Pete's got a skate park in his yard. Yeah, you can surf, you can skate. You can build your boards.
Hurricane Ridge too.
I've actually never ridden Hurricane. I need to.
Yeah, it looks steep. It looks insane. It looks
pretty
actually.
Sweet.
Yeah. And yeah.
It's hard to leave Baker.
Yeah. I've heard that about Whistler as well. Like guys that are from Whistler, like it's kind of hard to go other places.
I've been trying to get better at like exploring.
What was the Shasta trip? How did that come about?
So that came about a couple different ways. I hung out with Nick Russell at the Baldface course this fall. And we were just like, we're chatting, hanging. We kind of teamed up, did the course together. And we were like, dude, we should do some trips in the spring. Like, let's get out there. He invited me to come down to the Sierras and we did like a week long camp. It was epic. Like, went in full winter, came out full spring.
Oh,
like,
wow.
It was in the single digits when we went in and it was tropical when we left. It was pretty cool. But we scored some snow and he's like, dude, we're going to Shasta in a couple weeks. Like,
you Which Shasta's not a part of the Sierras, right? Like, it's like a cascade or something?
I'm not sure. I think it's 4 hours from Tahoe.
It's in the middle of nowhere, it feels like. Hey?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like this peak in the middle of like not
It's really
range.
Cool. It's like real forested and then there's just this volcano sticking up.
Yeah, it's so sick.
But my good buddy Jerry Mark, he's a ripping boarder. It was his birthday is on 420. They're all going down there. He's like, dude, come down. So we rallied down and camped out and just splitboarded on Shasta for 2 days and camped out and drank from the headwaters of the Sacramento and went searching
now you're
for
glowing.
Some
it's like, yeah, that's sick.
Went searching for some powder portals and
those are the kind of trips that's super fun. So like that board slide worldwide, how did that come about?
That came about from like not having a film project to work on.
Yeah.
I didn't have the sponsor support for Absinthe. I couldn't really find another outlet. Quicksilver, I kind of approached Quicksilver with the like, hey, I'd like to make a project. And they've always done that in surfing with like Dane Reynolds for years, so they were super down. And we did 2 years of making these projects, and then I was at a Ninja Suit catalog shoot.
Rad.
And we were just like kind of bantering in the office, and I was like, came up with the name Boardslide Worldwide. I forget what the context was, but I was like, Boardslide Worldwide. I was like, that would be a good name. And so then the next year we called the project Boardslide Worldwide. And then we've kind of just like settled. We're like, oh, that's like a good kind of foundation name.
Yeah.
But it's Sean, Lucy, and I. It started out as making short films for Quicksilver, which then evolved to making a web series. which then evolved to making our own projects and a web series and kind of incorporating and bringing a bunch of other people in to where it is now, which is, that's kind of what it is at the moment. Our dream with it is to make a movie. Like,
yeah,
myself and him very much want to make, like, we would love to make like a proper movie, get like four writers. The back end of that's crazy.
It is. Yeah.
Cause I do like all of the, like I do all the fundraising and producing, and then yeah, Lucy does all the editing and filming, and then like we collab on like all the direction and everything together.
Yeah, they're cool. They're super fun to. Thanks. Every single time they come out, I'm like hyped. And you get them, like they're definitely promoted on all the right channels.
Yeah,
so that's super sick.
Thanks.
Like it's, Bomb Hole and Slash and everything. Like it's always in my feed.
Nice.
When it first comes out. So like I'm excited. Like I like looking at, I'm like, oh cool, low numbers. I'm watching this before nice. Anybody, you know what I mean? And then you go back a couple of weeks later, watch it again, and you're like, oh shit, that's good. They're getting good views. That's Thanks. The way to do it.
That's yeah. good to hear that it's that you're seeing it. It's out
yeah,
there.
It's definitely there.
A lot goes into it, and it's definitely has its challenges because filming all day, and then also like Lucy's editing, he's putting all the assets together, I'm like doing all the copy, I'm like sending it all to the sponsors.
Oh, wow.
And then but since we do it, it's just us.
Yeah.
It allows us to send it to Slush and Snowboarder Journal and Torment and our sponsors and the rider sponsors.
Right.
Because it's not like a Mervin sponsors it, but it's not like a Mervin project.
Right, right.
Where it's like someone will be like, well, dude, I ride for Nitro. I don't really want to.
That's it. Yeah, you see that.
I don't want to put like a lib video on my account.
That's it. Yeah.
So
even going to Bowley, sometimes it's tough for me because I've got show sponsors.
Yeah.
It's not tough for me. It's just like now I'm tagging all these other sponsors that don't support my show and don't, you know, like I paid my way yeah. to go there and now I'm promoting. But it's a bit of that reciprocation of like, that's the community we're in.
Mm-hmm.
Like going to those crush events is like, yeah, I'll promote whoever's making this thing go.
Yeah.
Because this is the way to keep the community going.
Totally.
Not like I mean, sure, the X Games has its place, the Dew Tour, the Olympics, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a different machine
yeah.
than the community feel of like a Snowboy project. You show up there and you're like, but I get it. It's kind of, you're like, oh, really? Yeah. I gotta, okay. I'm shouting out whoever it was.
Yeah.
I'm in my posts
yeah.
now, which is. My sponsors are cool with it because they get it. It's a part of the community. But yeah. I could see when you're doing a thing.
Yeah.
It's interesting. The absinthe buy-in thing has just become like, that was just normal. Like those videos we grew up watching, people's sponsors paid to have them in that movie.
Yep.
It's just nuts to me
yeah.
that's how that worked. And that there would be guys out there that were great riders that just didn't get an opportunity to get filmed because they didn't have sponsors paying ad space for the thing.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense for that, like, that era. I think
yeah.
things have evolved now and it's different. But yeah, it was like the, you would get invited to film for the video. And then from there, it was like, okay, the sponsors need to pay your buy-in. Then that, once they have like their riders and all the sponsors, then that's like filmers' salaries, cost of distribution,
oh, right, of
cost
course.
Of like travel, like all the things. Where now it's like with our project, we use like, for instance, with the sponsor budget, it was like we went to Japan this year and it's like we used the budget to like pay for the van. So it's like,
yeah,
because I want,
yeah.
it's like we'll use, because we want riders to come, and it's like our budget's tiny,
yeah,
but at least yeah. we're like, dude, we can cover the van, and then we're able to like work out lodging
right
through a sponsorship and stuff. But like,
yeah, it's so I went to the Legends of Tahoe,
yeah,
and last year at the Legends, lift tickets were $25. This year they were like 110.
Oh, wow.
Right? And they're like, you know, the organizers, Bostic and Chantry, are trying their best to get free lift tickets for everybody. You know what I mean? Like, if they could. But then Donner's also going, well, hey, like, we need to make some money here. You're not paying to host the event here or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's just a big... You know, back in the day, it was like Nike's like, here's $200,000 to build some stuff in your park.
Yeah.
And for whatever, buy new accessories for your cat or whatever you want to do, you yeah. know, those budgets are not there anymore.
Yeah.
So now it's shoestring and passion.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I mean, that's all of us now.
Yeah.
That's, I mean... That's me for sure.
Definitely. And me too.
Yeah. But it's kind of fun too. Like, it's sort of neat that that's the job, is like calling yeah. people and going, hey, 1910, I'll wear your shirt on yeah. the show. Like, I like what you guys are doing. And they're like,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
Give us some numbers. Okay. Here's some numbers. Yeah. Yeah. So right. you're doing that for Board Slide Worldwide.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that's fun. You, how many projects did you guys do this year? Four or something?
We did three videos
yeah.
In the series. And then with each video, we put out a raw, which is like essentially the raw timeline before it gets cut down. And then we have a project coming out in the fall.
Yeah. Seven in 1 year.
Yeah.
Like, when you consider that compared to like one movie... Mm-hmm. It's like, I mean, that's what people's attention spans are now too, is yeah. these 7 minute edits throughout the year.
Yeah.
Oh, this is what we were doing. Like, it feels like last week, some of the stuff you're like watching going, hey, I think I was at Baker that day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's dope. It's definitely a unique path. Because we're trying to use what we have, like we're trying to utilize what we have. So after, like, I don't make any money. Like so it's not that I should, cause I get sponsors and endorsements, but, like all said and done after like our project expenses, like filmer, photographer, if needed, and that, like, our travel is so tiny, which yep. that's why it's like our edits are out of Baker, and like we'll go to Utah.
Yep.
And then like we're doing very like kind of, I guess, grassroots trips because we don't
totally.
Have the budget to
maybe Salter. We'll see it and be like, oh, Board Slide Worldwide. That sounds like something I should fund.
Yeah.
And then you have a budget. That's the way the industry goes, right? Like, there's huge snow years. Oh boy, it's boom. Yeah. Everything gets, all the budgets get up. And then it's like, ooh, we're trailing, you know, we got to cut everything back. Everything's going, we're yeah. in a recession, you know, that's the like industry part of it. Meanwhile, yeah. the whole time, we're just hoping it's a big snow year.
Yeah.
Not for budgets, just for like they're better than the lean ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Way better.
I mean, we had a pretty rough snow year this year.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a bad winter by any means.
It wasn't a bummer. Yeah. There was something about it that was like totally satisfying.
Yeah. We had some epic days. Like, I think I definitely had the deepest day I've ever had at Baker, and a few people, like very reliable sources, were like, this is the best powder day I think I've ever had at Baker.
Yeah, I think Bass was talking about it when we went on the trip.
It was just like 3 feet of unconsolidated duff. Just,
wow.
Like, it just plumed in the bottom, like, was soft. It wasn't like...
You weren't hitting. Yeah.
It wasn't like Jackson where it's like 3 feet of just blower on top of ice. Yeah, where you're like...
Yeah.
I'm riding waist deep powder, but somehow I'm snowboarding down a mogul field, which is something I've actually said to myself at Jackson Hole Resort. I'm like, I'm riding icy moguls, but the snow is up to my belly button. This is crazy.
That is nuts. That is nuts.
But yeah, I mean, it, you know, there was little treats throughout the winter that kept us stoked, where there was a point where like, ooh, this could be the worst winter ever. This is horrible. Yeah, totally. But then it was like Mother Nature was like, here's a pow day. Like, filled up the cup a little bit.
And it just it gives you that pow amnesia right away, yeah, where you're like, oh, this is good.
And then you forget about, you're like, I completely forgot that I was riding dirt all of December.
Yeah, that was nuts. That was nuts. So. Yeah, the intern for the show from a couple of years ago, Josh, had that clip of him riding down Baker just on the, it was just dirt.
Yeah.
Like there was no snow. I think 50 million people saw that.
Yeah. That was a crazy, that was from this year, right?
That was from this year. In the rain, it's just like wet, and they're like turning, the one dude's on skis, and
that was
like
on the Honkers cat track.
That's it, on Honkers cat track.
Like, I think Honkers, literally like the face of Honkers that goes down to six.
Yeah.
I want to say it was only open for like a very short period of time.
Right. And that's, I mean, that's opening day shit.
Yeah,
Honkers.
For sure.
Like, I've ridden Honkers opening day. That's actually kind of a fun fall line for opening day if you get there early enough. And you get, not just kind of, it's an awesome fall line if you know your way across the cat track without getting cliffed out.
That's a back to the kickflip on the road gap.
Yep.
Honkers, I refer to it as like my El Toro. Like Jamie Thomas kickflipping El Toro.
Yeah.
Because I love snow skating.
Yeah.
So once spring hits and it's slushy, I'm like, oh yeah, snow skate season. And I'll be ripping Honkers, the cat track, and I do a, like, I go up onto the wall, do a turn, set up, and then I've been trying to kickflip into Honkers for three seasons, and I've landed on it a couple times, but I'll like land and then just hit a mogul and just detonate.
Yeah.
But I'm always like, Honkers is my El Toro. And then this year, by the time it got slushy, it was all dirt again.
It's dirt. So yeah. There just wasn't enough there.
But
you'll get it.
Yeah.
That's sick. Well, and then once you've got that, then you can kickflip the gap.
Yeah. Easy.
Probably.
Yeah. Stepping stones.
Yeah. Because that's just a big step down.
Yeah.
But you could go huge off that.
Oh, that'd be wild.
How long have you been snow skating? For years and stuff? Or
no, I came across a snow skate at the hut at the factory.
Yeah.
The Mervin factory. Maybe probably like 4 years, but I really only do it a couple days a year.
Yeah. Big ski style, not the little ski.
No, I have a little ski.
Yeah, I saw it in the truck.
It's tiny.
It's tiny, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a liability at high speeds.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Yeah, the last clip I saw of you on it, you were doing the banks line.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's insane. And making it look good, because that's the hardest thing about snow skating is that it's just a lot of this.
Yeah.
There's a lot of windows rolling down, because you're not strapped in. It's insane.
Yeah, I feel like every little bump.
Yeah.
It's pretty aggressive. But
I want to see you kickflip the road gap. I think you could do it
one day.
Yeah, that'd be super sick. Bass has to be there.
Yeah,
just to cheer you on. Are you friends with Jason? You ride with him from time to time?
Bass? You know, I've never ridden with Bass.
That's crazy.
I know,
that's crazy to
I've
me.
Heard a lot about him.
Yeah, because he's like Baker OG.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And just like a good dude.
Yeah.
And a fast rider.
Super fast.
Yeah.
I ride with like Temple and Cannon. Mm-hmm. See them up there a bunch. I rode with Cannon a lot this year.
Yeah.
I ride with like Jason Loeb and like his family.
Dope.
Like Max and Callie.
Yeah, because it used to be Bass and Loeb. Like that.
Yeah, those were the Oi boys.
The Oi boys, dude. I actually heard you saying Oi in the Velvet Castle thing, and I was like, Oi. That's a couple of times. Yeah, where I was like, that's sick. Yeah.
But, dude, I pulled out issue zero because I thought it was suiting. There's this photo of Ox.
Yep.
I want it. It's got to be from AK, but he's just doing like a huge heel side turn, big old roost.
And yeah, hold that up for the camera there. Yeah, there you go.
So,
damn.
I mean, issue zero frequency is like, you know, it's a very, it's a pretty iconic issue for snowboard magazines. But that photo, I was always like, who is Ox? I never knew who Ox was.
Right.
But I loved that photo. And one day, stormy Mount Baker day, we get off the chair and I'm strapping in on the elbow and this big dude pulls up on a doughboy. And I was like, whoa, like, this dude's sick. Like, no idea who it was. And he's like, hey, can I tag along with you guys? I don't have a partner. We're like, yeah, for sure. And then he just drops in. He's on a doughboy, like takes off. We're like just kind of party lapping this mellow line. And he was ripping. And I was like, who is this dude on a doughboy ripping? And we get to the bottom and he like looks at me and he's like, oh, sick. Like, you kept up. And I was like, in my mind, I was like, yes, whatever. Like, cool. And either way, we parted ways. We're like, sick run. He's like, yeah, dude, sick. That was dope. And I was like, who was that guy? And Colin Wiseman from Snowboarder Journal, he's like, dude, that was Ox. And I was like, no way. That was like the Ox. Like, I was like, he has my favorite photo in issue zero of him just like Cadillac. Exactly. Heel side turn of just like the biggest rooster tail. Haven't seen him since. We never exchanged names, but that run was iconic. Like, went down as one of the sickest runs because I was just, you know, like trailing, just kind of watching him like, dude, this dude is ripping. Yeah,
good style. Very good aggressive style. The Baker, that era of Baker guys, so like I had a very similar experience with Farmer. He was like the first snowboarder I interviewed for Effin' Rad, other than Dmitry Milovich and Sherman Poppin. So I'd had those two guys in the can. I come down to Baker. It was a similar year to this year where there was no snow anywhere, way too late in the year. It sucked. And Sean had driven all the way from Tahoe because he heard it was going to snow a foot. It wasn't like an epic day, but it was like a good day.
Yeah.
And just following him, he was riding a Yes 420, actually.
Oh, nice.
Which is like, he should be on a doughboy, right? He's on a 420 and he's ripping. And just following him, just how aggressive they ride the mountain.
Yeah.
And Ox, same thing. I've had an Ox day just like you, where he's like, can I crew up with you? You just by yourself? I'm like, yeah, I'm waiting for anybody. He's like, well, let's go. And then just watching him tear it up. And then Tex is another guy.
Yeah.
Dan Donnelly is just so frigging good. You got history here. Fulton, Bass.
A lot of history.
Baker is nuts, people that ride it.
Yeah, it's inspiring. It's honestly, like, as a mountain rider, I guess, backcountry rider, just all mountain rider.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate. It's like technical. It's challenging. You have to learn your way around and figure it out. Like, the people that snowboard here are super strong, and like, it really kind of prepares you for anything.
Yeah.
And it's like, by the time January comes around, like, your legs are strong, and in the Craig Kelly book, when he's talking about when he discovered one of the lines, and it makes so much sense, like, the way he discovers it, he's like, it's crazy, like, storming, but then you like tuck in and it's like quiet and just calm. And then you like shoot out again and it's all crazy, like stormy. And you're just like, that's how that run was discovered? Like, Craig named that run? Like, that's insane. And you're just, all these stories of just I mean, even like riding with Temple, like the stuff that he rides, it's like I take laps with him and I'm like, dude, I've never even been into this nook and cranny.
Yeah.
And there's still like riding here, you know, for the last 7-8 years every day. And then from yeah. like the years before that and my whole life riding here, it's like there's still, I swear, like every year I find a new nook and cranny that I'm like, whoa. I didn't even know this existed.
And it's a small resort. It's not huge. I just went to Whistler with the Boardroom. Like, the Boardroom owner closes the store for a day and takes everyone in the shop up to Whistler. There was like 40 people. And I was like, holy shit, Whistler is humongous. It's insanely huge.
Yeah.
But not every part of it is gnarly. Like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of moving around. There's a lot of traversing. There's a lot of cat tracks and long run. Oh, let's try over here. And you have to kind of take a lift up and down to another one and up to another one. Whereas Baker is pretty all in one little compact zone.
Yeah.
But there's gnarly, like you just said, there's gnarly, gnarly stuff under every chair.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
And you always see, you'll like be on one chair and you'll look over and just see some just solo ripper just riding something crazy.
You don't know
crazy.
If it's like Temple Cummings or if it's just Joe from Glacier.
Yeah.
Like there's sometimes I've seen people on opening day launching off stuff that, you know, yeah. on six where you're like, dude, there's like 2 feet in here on rocks. That's gnarly, gnarly rocks you yeah. guys are sending right now. But yeah, it's a strong, and people don't, it's not like Whistler where it's like, oh, did you hear so-and-so is here? You know, it's more of a low key vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a good community.
Yeah.
Good community really, really good of riders. Community. And it's sweet because it's like when it's bad here, it's like so bad. But when it's good, it's good. So you're kind of, you know, it's not like, I think it takes a certain style of rider that's drawn here because when you get it, it's like it all makes sense.
But, tenacious, yeah. Yeah, it's cool actually looking. I was at the Baker head office in Bellingham for Josh Dirksen's interview. And we're looking at the posters on the wall and there's like Duncan sending something on skis. And like, I don't want to say, but I think it was maybe the 60s. I don't know.
Probably
like ripping young Duncan.
That's awesome.
So like, it's always been the same kind of, it's like cowboys, you know yeah. what I mean? Like if you ever get a chance to talk to the Pro Patrol, they're taking yeah. their job so seriously.
Yeah.
And all of them are here because of what you just described. Like yeah. when it's firing, there's nowhere better.
Yeah. That's always like I always make a point at like, whether it's in the lift line or like in passing on a cat track, like on those big days, like when you see a Pro Patroller, you're just like multiple times. I'm just like, dude, thanks for opening it up.
Yes,
like,
thank you.
Like yeah. you got to thank your patrollers because they made like the Pro Patrol here. They're so good and they yeah. are like the gatekeepers to the terrain. And it's like, yeah, the mountain doesn't open till 9:30. It's like, you know, it's going to be
there's a reason. Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
you can't be bummed. Like you're like, these dudes are making it so we can ride.
Also, they're mobile emergency room doctors
yeah.
in the wilderness.
Yeah.
It's gnarly. It's nuts what they're trained for and how well they can do it. I remember a couple years back when I did the bank slalom, a woman was buried in an avalanche down the Elf Chutes and they saw it from the other side. And I think they were down to her and had her out in under a minute or 2 minutes or something. Yeah. Like it was like, just like that. Like they're like, oh, it's going to pop. And then it did. And then they had eyes on where she would probably be. And they just got there, probed her and wow. got her out.
Incredible.
Yeah. Like it's nuts. they're heroes. They are. They really are keeping us safe, kind of keeping us as safe as we can keep ourselves. We got to do some of that equation for sure.
Yeah.
Rad, Austin. Well, is there anything we didn't touch on that, like, I want to thank you so much for following up with me and staying on top of doing this. And then also for being the anchor episode of season 9, which is super dope.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure watching you snowboard over the years. Holy shit.
Thanks.
Just keep doing it. Natural selection, we didn't really touch on as much as I would have loved to.
Yeah.
Like, I love when you opened it and you overshot that landing by like double or something. Yeah. Like, what a great way to open that up.
Yeah.
And like, oh yeah, great. Austin's gonna get to go. And then just like such high speed. That was epic.
Yeah, it's I struggle with the speed sometimes because as you know, I'm 5'2". I'm a pretty small dude, and I've always struggled. And I remember like the first time I went to Wendell's, like you'd hit a cat, like I went to spring camp, so we're riding the meadows and we'd hit the cat track and everyone's just like long gone and I'm just pumping, like trying to get every little bump, and I'm like, I don't have any weight, I can't carry speed. And then like I kind of then on forum I was like made it a point, like I'm gonna be the guy that guinea pigs the jumps because I can't trust anyone's speed.
Right.
Like I hit a backcountry jump with Andreas. He went first, perfect speed, started from the same spot, landed in the middle between. It was like it was the Whopper in Tahoe. That like famous jump across from Sierra. And I'm like, you know, he goes first. I'm like, oh dude, sick. Speed was awesome. Looks great. All right, I'm going front seven, come around. I'm just like, oh no. Luckily it's like Tahoe 4 feet deep. Yeah. And literally just like biggest bomb hole in my life. And then I was like, all right, I'm guinea pig guy. Like every park shoot, I was like, I have to hit the jump first because I can't trust the speed. And then now it's hard because with natural selection, all those jumps, you know, like you look at it from the side far away where that jump, it looked huge. I was like, that's a 60-foot jump. Like that thing is big.
Yeah.
And I'm coming in and it's deep. So I'm like, I need to maintain my speed. So I kind of set my line and then everything was going good. And right when I swear like that takeoff was exposed and it must have got a little wind drift and it just buffed it. And it was like Mario Kart. I hit the lip and just accelerated. Speed felt like it doubled. And I'm just like front three and I'm in the air like, all right, it's 4 feet deep. Like I'm going to do whatever I can to land, even though it's flat. Like I'll try. So it's this constant hurdle of like, how fast do I need to go? Because, you know, like, Travis is a big dude, so if he's taking a couple turns, I probably need to maybe take one turn or two turns.
Right,
so,
right.
It's
I can't wait to see you win it. I think you'll win it one day.
Thanks.
It's just it's like your style of thing, right? Like it's just, but it's getting super tight. This year, the competition was insane.
Yeah, there's everyone has their speculations on the seeding round and all of that. But what it comes down to is like, there's no easy pick.
There's no easy pick.
It's everyone there can win.
Yep.
And everyone's capable. And it's like, you know, you could have a day where all the men and women have the best day of their lives snowboarding, but there's only, at the end of that day, there's only going to be one male, one female that were the best of the best.
So that's it. Like,
and
it's a bit of luck in there, right? Like it's just like filming or something, like where you're trying to put down a line that looks really good. You're trying to flow it, and you're trying to, and you can mitigate certain things, but there's stuff that's out of your control.
There is. And yeah, the like judging's hard. So you're always, you're like, all right, I need to mix freestyle, but I also need to take risk.
Yeah.
I need to do a trick, but I also need to ride something gnarly. I need to like ride a new line. But then you're like, I really wanted to ride this line, and then someone rode the same line. You're like, do I go with the track or do I set a new track? Like, there's all these weighing factors. Whereas like a competitor, it's like you feel like you're doing the world's hardest math equation. You're just like, all right, if the front three balances out the pillow line, and then I can put a method in there, but then ride switch for a feature, maybe my score will be good enough. It's a shot in the dark.
It is. It's got to be. And then you have to make all that line up and put it all down.
Yeah.
It's got to be such a bummer when you think you've got the speed and then the thing is so small.
Yeah. That happened to me in the finals this year. Top hit, I was like, I want a front three into this face.
Yeah.
And I went off the takeoff and I was like, I don't have any speed.
Oh, no.
And I like did the world's smallest front three and I was like, great. That was cool.
It's wild. It's got to be wild. I saw you at the bottom during the live event, and just how you were, even when you were out, you were still stoked, and you were stoked for everybody there. It's like,
yeah,
you could tell that you don't weigh it so heavy that it's like, oh, if I don't win NST this year, what a bummer or whatever. It's like, you're just stoked to, that's the story I'm telling myself.
Totally.
You're stoked to be there.
Yeah.
What a great crew of people to be amongst.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I think for myself, you know, I don't compete on the regular.
Yeah.
But I'm a very competitive person and I enjoy competition.
Cool.
I mean, I think anyone that says yes to it, like I'd be lying if I told you, like, I mean, I do the comp and I want to win.
Yeah, of course.
But I know that I can manifest, I can do all the work and I can train. But at the end of the day, it's like, it's either your day or it's not.
Right.
And for me, the natural selection, it's like not the end all be all. It's like part of my season that I enjoy doing. And this year I was like, I was stoked to make it through the duel because that was a huge hurdle.
Where was your duel this year? I watched it.
It was in Colorado.
With who was
Red Girard?
Oh, that was a sick one.
So then, yeah. So you have like the pressure of the duel and you're like, okay, I'm committed to the duel because I want to do the natural selection.
Yeah.
Make it through the duel. That's like pretty stressful. And then you're like at the contest. And I always just, the thing that kind of keeps my headspace clear is like reminding myself that I'm there because I committed to being there. And like, I wanted to compete. And I truly like enjoy the opportunity to strap in next to like this year it was Ben Ferg.
Yeah.
Like I'm a huge fan. I see like, we've never really gotten to film together, but like I love his snowboarding. So for me, I'm like, this is an amazing opportunity to snowboard with Ben. And
that's dope.
Like, unfortunately, one of us gets to move on.
That
but
is
then
the bummer.
Even like you move on and then you might get bumped out. It's like,
yeah,
there's no safe way to play it. But at the end of the day, it's like when I got knocked out, I was stoked because, yeah, it was like I got the opportunity to ride. I was, can't be bummed on that. Like,
yeah, right.
And the riding that day was top tier. It was like,
well, incredible. I was surprised to find out that the competition, the Selkirk one, ran the next day.
Yeah.
Because like the weather window was, you got to take it while you can.
Yeah. We didn't even leave the Revelstoke venue until 5 p.m.
And then they ran the one the next day.
Yeah, it was like
somewhere
at the hangar
else.
At 7, hellied out. We did one warm-up run, scope, and then we started the comp.
Oh, my God.
It was pretty wild. But yeah, by the time, I want to say like by the time finals were running, it was like pretty cooked.
Yeah.
Not bad, but there was like there was a sun crest, and then the next day it was like plus 5 or 8 degrees.
Oh,
like
it was run in warm conditions.
Like it was real. Like the morning was as good as it gets. Like such good blower, and then as the sun heated up, and then it went into the shade, so it created that little bit of sun crest, I think. But
yeah.
Even then, it wasn't bad. But yeah, they snuck in there. I don't know how they do it, but...
Well, that's it. They have to do it, right?
Perfect conditions.
Yeah, Travis is a different person, right? Like, he's running a show and competing in it. It's like nuts. It's like doing karaoke at your own party or something, like, and knocking it out of the park. It just doesn't make sense that he can... Because he's very involved in the behind-the-scenes stuff, too, right?
Yeah, very involved.
That's so nuts. Must be fun to sit with him afterwards when he has that release valve where he's just like, okay, it's done, let's celebrate.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think, I don't want to speak for him, but from conversations and stuff, I think his ultimate goal is like he just wants... to provide a venue and conditions that allows people to ride at their highest potential.
Totally.
Like, I think that's like what he really wants. Like, I noticed that on finals day, he was so stoked that everyone rode really well. Cause I remember we were like getting ready to leave and he was like, dude, this segment's gonna be good. Like, he was stoked.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good mindset to be in.
Oh my god!
Like, as a viewer,
course.
Like, too, it's you want to watch top tier boarding.
I was kind of watching him at the end, going like that. He got beat. He was definitely bummed, and he's in my telling to myself. The story is that he's like really trying to be like, oh yeah, not a big deal that I didn't make it to finals. Or that's fine, whatever, it's cool. But like, you could see it's like eating him up. But
totally,
like, he's like, damn it, I wish I would have got that. Hey, what are those judges thinking? I gotta talk to those guys or whatever. That's the story I'm telling. But like, of course, even if he got last place, he's putting on this insane event.
Mm-hmm.
And so on some level, he gets to claim like, I got us here.
Yeah.
Like, I made this happen.
Yeah.
Which is super sick. I've been critical of it, like in private, just about like, you don't win your own contest or whatever, even what I just said. Like, I don't want to go to a guy's house where he's having a party and he's karaokeing and he's, you know, like, oh, wow, you're really good at karaoke. That's cool.
Yeah.
But there's something about the natural selection thing that is him kicking the door down to being like, look, I'm not ready for snowboarding to not be, you know, like on a world stage and having like real money, like, you know, helicopters flying and like venues, mm-hmm. like closing for us to do this thing. I'm not ready for that to be over. Like, we still need this. And I don't know anyone else that's coming anywhere close to.
Yeah. I think he's like with him in the contest, it's, you know, it's not, it's unique in the sense of like, he still has to do all the same things as everyone else to win it.
Yeah.
You know, like last year he had to do a duel and he's kind of the face of the contest. He's kind of like Kelly Slater. And I mean, Kelly Slater didn't start the WSL,
right?
But very much so is like a quintessential part of it. He's the face of it. And like, you know, it's like any sport or contest, there kind of needs to be like the person. And I mean, Travis is still obviously the one of the best out. There's no sign of him slowing down.
It's so, nuts.
And it's like, if you beat, I mean, I haven't gone head to head with him, but I mean, if I did, and if I took Travis out, I'd be like, that is a huge, I could lose next heat and I'm good.
Like, that's it. Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely.
Yeah.
It's one of those things from the sidelines. It's easy to just be a critic and go like, oh man, these guys are just doing backflips and 360s normally in their parts. they're doing stuff that makes this look shitty.
Yeah.
But then it's also like, no, this is a live event. Mm-hmm. And these are, this is like a great equalizer. Everybody's at the same run at the same time. Like, it's not easy to put down. You don't get six hike up tries at it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I would love, it'd be kind of cool though if they put like a back three tax.
A back three
tax. They're like, they're like, every back three, you just get deducted. Like, they're just like, that's a zero. Just, let's just, no back threes allowed. Unless it's like a crazy one.
Unless it's a crazy one. But that's the thing, like you said.
Very much so. Like, I hope that it keeps evolving. Mm-hmm. To the point where we can step away, because it is very much back three, back flip.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
Because it's,
I mean, that's what you have to do. You're trying to win. You're trying to win. And and the judges and the show, those things are what you're going to pull out when you're like fucking scared and you're going off something massive.
Totally.
And you're in the middle of, So like this year was the first year where some of the finals runs, there was, it was not, none of that. Like, they were just like insane, which was dope to see.
That was cool.
I mean, it just gets better and better every year. Mm-hmm. That's what it comes down to. Yeah. And it would be a huge loss to the snowboard community to not have that event happening.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I just can't wait to see. I'm sure in the future, way down 20 years from now, there'll be someone who just enters on a pow surf. You know what I mean?
That would be pretty sick.
And that just holds their own on a pow surf. No
Volley in there.
Yeah, exactly. Just nuts.
On his asthma.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Right on, dude. All right, I got to get some food.
Yeah, same.
You got...
appreciate you coming down.
I appreciate you having me in your house, Baker. Dude. This is sick.
Yeah.
I'd love to take some laughs with you. We'll do it at Bowley.
Dude, let's do it.
Yeah.
I'd be honored.
Yeah. Oh, come on. It'll be fun, dude. Right on.
Yeah.
Austin, you're the best.
Dude, thank you. Truly honored to be on here.
Thanks, dude. Peace. Oh, that was great.
Dude, thank you.
F and Rad shout outs this week to Austin Sweeten. Thank you so much, man, for hosting me down at your house at Baker. Thank you, Patreon listeners. Thank you, Skyview Campers. Thank you, Wired Snowboards, Fixed Bindings, Rip Curl Outerwear, New Greens, and Boardroom. I'll still be putting out bonus content for a few more weeks. I'm working on a second podcast project called These Are My 50s, which I'll be posting for feedback on the Patreon before I put them out to the world. If you want to help support my not having a job other than podcasting, now is the lean time. With no more sponsor money left, it's truly crunch time, and your $5 a month can go a long way towards making my dream a reality. This season has already been absolutely dreamy. Quit my job, went to Baldface, rode with Tyler at Baldy, rode with the Legends of Tahoe at Donner. Thank you, listeners. You're the reason I do this shit, and you've changed my life forever. Next season is season 10, and I'm going after every Canadian pro from the golden era in an attempt to tell the history of snowboarding in Canada in 25 episodes. If you want to get involved as an interviewee, a sponsor, or a supporter, reach out to me at fnradpodcast@hotmail.com. I love you all. Thank you so much for an epic season. And be sure to come back next season for more effin' rad snowboarding, brought to you by Effin' Rad Productions.